prophet Isaiah talks about being a light unto the nations, and one of the ideas, the symbolism of the menorah, is you light the lights in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol goes in every morning, cleans out the wicks, and at night, in the evening, he lights them all. One of the candles is a miracle. It was a Ner Tamid, which we have over here. The Ner Tamid, which is a light that never goes off. The middle candle, according to Rashi, the middle candle of the menorah never went out. It was a miracle in the temple. The Kohen Gadol never had to lit it. He lit it once, and that's it. Lasted forever. Lasted 24 hours every time. And every time he would light it, it would last another 24 hours. So it never went out. He would just keep on lighting it. It never went out. So it was a miracle. And that menorah symbolizes, the Rambam tells us, Morei Nevuchim, obviously, there was no one in the Beit HaMikdash. What was light on all night? The Rambam tells us, so people, it symbolizes the idea that Hashem never sleeps. The light in his office is always on. A person passes the Beit HaMikdash, he's a light on all the time, 24 hours a day. And that symbolizes the light of God going out into the world. The light of God goes out into the world. And that's our mission, is to spread the light of God into the world. So how do we do that? How do Jews through history spread the light of God through the world? It's interesting, if you look at Jewish history, and you read, look at the encyclopedia, open up religions of the world. Right? Talks about the great religions of the world. Right? Think about the great religions of the world. And then list the numbers. And we are the smallest nation. 12 million people. You've got one over a billion Muslims, over a billion Christians. And then Jews, 12 million. How can we be a great religion? And the answer is we're not great through our numbers, we're great through our influence. Because no people has influenced the world more than the Jews, and the influence has been through the book, through writings, through learning, through teaching. So the Torah has influenced the world more than any other book. How did the Torah influence the world? And the answer is it influenced the world by being adopted by other religions. Right? Christianity adopted the Torah, called the Old Testament. Islam took the Torah and rewrote it, called the Quran. Which is basically, if you look at the Quran, it starts with the story of Adam and Eve. Took it straight from the Torah. So that's how we influence the world. Obviously, it hasn't been enough because they're still killing each other. People are still killing each other. So it hasn't influenced the world enough. So why are we trying to influence the world? The second purpose of Judaism, explicit in the Torah. It's an idea with which we end our three daily prayers. Letaken olam malchut shaddai. Right, we say Aleinu Shabeach, right? The end of Aleinu Shabeach. Someone asked me, he says, Rabbi, tell me the whole Judaism on one foot. So we have that before, right? Hillel says, what does Hillel say? Absolutely. Don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. Rabbi Kiva says, V'haftar reich kamocha. That's the whole of Judaism. If you ask Rabbi Besus, what's the whole of Judaism on one foot? Letaken olam malchut shaddai. To fix the world under the kingship of God. That's how we end off the Aleinu. Our mission in the world is to fix the world under the kingship of God. Which means to create an ethical, moral, monotheistic world civilization. Where there will be no more hunger, no more poverty, no more lawlessness, no more strife. A society in which the people will be engaged in brotherhood and peace and devote the greater part of their time to the pursuit of knowledge of God. That's the perfect society. That's our mission. Our mission is to create this perfect society. And how do we do that? And the answer is one at a time. We first create ourselves. We perfect ourselves. That's the hard part. I tell you, the hardest part is perfecting ourselves. To create an island of peace in our homes. Not so hard. Unless you live by yourself, then you can create an island of peace. But even then, you got peace within. That's the hard part as well. Peace within. How does a person create peace within oneself? So we talk about ourselves as being the children of Abraham and Sarah, whom we look up to as ancestors. As opposed to the other nations of the world, they're called Bnei Noach. The other nations are called the Bnei Noach. The truth is, we're also Bnei Noach, right? Because Abraham himself was from Noach. In fact, some people say Abraham saw Noach. Noach lived a long time. Noach lived for 950 years. Noach lived 950 years. Can you imagine? He had a long life, Noach. And Abraham Avinu definitely saw Shem, even though it was 10 generations removed from Noach. Can you imagine? There were 10 generations between Noach and Abraham, but Noach lived for 950 years. So he could see him. Shem, the son of Noach. We know that the stories are, the Midrash tells us that Yaakov Avinu learned in the yeshiva of Shem and Eber. So Shem was still alive. Even though it was 10 generations, these people lived a long time. Can you imagine seeing a great answer? It says Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv lived to 102. And he had a great great grandson, and he said, I can be a witness at his wedding because I'm not related to him. Well, it's after four generations, not related anymore. We're related to each other three generations. After three generations, you're not related. You're an ancestor, but technically in Jewish law, you're not related anymore. Imagine, it's hard to imagine. He can be a witness at his wedding. That means he's not related. He's not biased anymore. His testimony is not biased.
Are in-laws considered also not related or related?
They're not related. We're from Torah law, not related.
So they can be considered?
The only exception is a man cannot marry his wife's sister as long as his wife is alive, even though they're divorced. I mean, not, but that's because of hanky-panky issues. That's another issue, not because they're related. But, what was your question? They cannot. A person cannot marry his wife's sister as long as she's alive. Exactly. And that's the reason why it was made. It's good. Sorry, can I ask you a question?
No, that was it. I just wanted to understand from an in-law perspective, an in-law can be a witness at your wedding.
No, we don't allow it. We don't allow it. For rabbinical reasons, we don't allow it. Oh. We don't allow any relatives to be involved. We want to be clear of any questions. We're clear of any questions. And then it's better not to even fourth degree relatives.
So like cousin-in-law, even that far?
Yeah, okay, it's better not to. It's allowed. It's allowed. But we don't need questions. We don't need questions around the wedding. We try and get witnesses which are 100% no questions. Why get involved with questions? And because in Jewish law, there's always debates, and there's always people who, there's always different opinions. So you may find one opinion that says yes, one opinion says no. Why get involved with discussions? Just go for the highest level. So Le'at Chila, we try and find people that are not relative at all. Okay, so we're trying to figure out what is the purpose of the Torah, and the answer is, the second purpose is to be role models for the world. The first purpose is to perfect ourselves, which is why we learn Musar. With all the Musar, with all the learning, it's so hard. Perfect oneself. It's harder to change one attribute, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, than to learn the whole of Shas. To change one habit is harder than to learn the whole Talmud. It's hard to understand. We're so fixed in our ways, it's so hard to change one thing. And sometimes we get into ruts. You know. Once you get into a bad rut, it's very hard to change. You get into bad habits at home, screaming and shouting and fighting, and then before a person knows it, it's over. Because it's very hard to change a habit. So a person's going to try and change a habit. How do you change a habit? So Rambam says, if you do something three times, it becomes a habit. So to change a habit, you do something three times the other way, and you can change the habit. It becomes a good habit. So how do we change the world? The question is, why are we called the children of Abraham and Sarah, not the children of Noah? How come we're not called Bnei Noah? How come we're called Bnei Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov? And the answer is because Noah failed. Noah's biggest failure was? He didn't change people around him. The whole world was destroyed and he was saved. So you can look at it as upon a success. He successfully saved himself. You're right. What about the rest of the world? So Yeshayahu HaNavi says, he calls the flood Me Noach. The waters of Noach. He's blaming Noach. The flood of Noach. This is called the flood of Noach. What do you mean blame? Why are you blaming Noach? And the answer is because Noach failed terribly. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the world. What should he have done?
Argued with God.
Argue! He wasn't Jewish. He was a Ben Noach.
Didn't he get them in the position that they were in to begin with? Because he created tools that suddenly created...
That wasn't him. That was Tubal Cain. Tubal Cain started creating metal implements, it says. It actually says. But Noah created tools that allowed farming. He created a plow. Noah created a plow. Tubal Cain created all the metal implements, the metal age. But that's why he got the name Noah. Zei Nachamenu. He will comfort us. How do he comfort mankind? He created plowing tools. Created plowing tools. Noah made it plowing much easier. But I don't think you blame him for that. The rabbis blame him because Hashem says there's going to be a flood. Instead of trying to change the world, instead of praying for the world, he just kept quiet. So he built the ark, and that's why it took him too long. That's why it took him 200 years to build an ark. Imagine, 200 years. He's banging away for 200 years. Why is he banging away 200 years? So people will come and hear and see him and say, what are you doing, Noach? He'll tell them, Hashem is mad at you guys. Do teshuvah. So our role models, our ancestors are not, we don't call Noah our ancestor, even though he was. Because we don't want to emulate Noah, we want to emulate Abraham and Yitzhak. So Abraham Avinu moved to Canaan, Kol al nefesh asher asu b'Haran. And all the souls they made in Haran. What souls they make in Haran? All the people they converted to monotheism. Imagine. Avraham Avinu, we have no idea. Rambam tells us a bit of history. So Avraham Avinu wrote books. He gathered people, thousands and thousands of people in a stadium, and he would talk to them. He was like the first gospel guy, but he was preaching monotheism. He was preaching monotheism to the masses. So he was our ancestor. He's our role model. We emulate Abraham. We don't emulate Noah. We emulate Abraham. That's our hero. Abraham and Noah were both at very high spiritual levels. They both communicated with God. Imagine, they're much higher than us. Noah was much higher than us. Noah Hashem spoke to Noah directly, which is amazing. It's God speaking to someone. But he never reached out to other people. He never tried to improve society in an ethical sense. When Hashem told him to destroy the world, he instructed him to build a boat for himself and his family. Now maybe Noah didn't know that you could pray for others. We don't know. He never had anyone. There was no one in the world who ever prayed for other people in those days. So he was the first. So it's a gut reaction. Like there's a gut reaction. Noah, I'm going to destroy the world. Now what's your response? What's going to happen to me? Well, you're going to be saved. Okay. That's fine. So instead of having a gut response, how can you do this, Hashem? It's not fair. There's righteous people. There's 10 righteous people like Avraham Avinu straight away. And Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is modeled after Abraham. Moshe Rabbeinu saves the whole generation. When does he save the whole generation?
After the golden calf.
After the golden calf. Hashem says, leave them alone. Leave me alone. Hashem says, leave me alone. B'chaleo tam karaga. I'll destroy them all. I'll wipe them out. And you will be the survivor. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? I'm not going to be another Noah. I'm not going to be another. He says, mecheni na. Rabbis say, mecheni mem chet nun yud. Has got the same letters as Mei Noach. Mecheni na, erase my name. Mecheni mem chet nun yud. Mem yud is Mei, nun chet is Noach. Mecheni na, the waters of Noach. He says, no, I'm not going to be another Noach. I'm Abraham Avinu. Now it's interesting, the Arizal says that in a sense, the Moshe Rabbeinu fixed Noach. He was a tikkun of Noach. Why? Because there's only twice in the Torah they have the word Teva, the Ark. Once in the story of Noah, once in the story of Moshe. Moshe was put in a Teva. It's interesting. And here he comes back, he has to come back in a Teva. And he's saved by the water. Again, Noah was saved in the water. And he saves his people as opposed to being destroyed. Like Noah left the people destroyed. He fixed that. So he fixed Noah in a sense. So Noah failed his generation, unfortunately. He was a tzaddik, who's a tzaddik for himself. A person shouldn't be a tzaddik for themselves only. A person's got to reach out, a person's got to go out there. A person has to do what they can to help other people. And it's interesting, Moshe Rabbeinu taught the sons of Aaron. He was called the father of the sons of Aaron, in a sense. He gave birth to them, Rashi says, because he taught them. You teach someone Torah, it's like you create them. So Avraham Avinu created a lot of people. Yes. Arizal. 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 The Arizal said that. May Noach is Mecheni Na. Is May Noach. Arizal.
He was
Metaken Noach. Yeah.
Wow.
Teva Teva.
It's never heard that
yeah. Arizal says a lot of stuff. Wow. A lot of stuff. A lot of things. A lot of amazing stuff. Amazing things. And. The Ramban also. Ramban can tell who was a Gilgul of who and who fixed what. Anyway, so here is Noah. He didn't plead with Hashem. He didn't try and change people's attitudes. He minded his own business. When people came to ask him, he would answer them. And the same thing with the yeshiva of Shem and Ever. Shem and Ever. Yeah, two big tzaddikim. Shem and his son Ever. And they're teaching the Noahide laws. But they only taught people who went to them. They never reached out. They never advertised. Whereas Avraham Avinu was walking around the land. Everywhere he went, he would name the place after God. Everywhere he went. He called the place Beit El, House of God. So now people say, where am I going? I'm going to Beit El. I'm going to House of God. They don't realize now. They're saying God's name. So they're learning about God just by saying, I'm going to a certain location. And Yitzhak Avinu is digging wells. Why is he digging wells? It says he calls the wells after the names that his father called the wells. Which means all the wells were named, had God's name on them. This way people are saying, where are you going today? I'm going to the well of God. I'm going to Be'er L'chai Ro'i. I'm going to the well of the living watcher, which is God. So this is the way they spread God in the world, by naming towns after God. Amazing. Naming places after God.
So in essence, Abraham's father was a sales guy, and he was sort of like a sales guy too.
Abraham's father was selling pagan idols.
But granted, he was still a sales guy.
Yes.
Shem and Abram's.
Yes.
Shem's father was Noah, who didn't
spread. Right, exactly. They're keeping things to themselves. And so Abraham Avinu, just like his father, just instead of selling idols, he was selling Hashem. He was a salesman, you're right. First salesman, very good. So it's good, we're all salesmen. We have to be salesmen. Jews are salesmen by nature. We're trying to sell. What are we trying to sell? We're trying to sell monotheism. We're trying to sell ethics. And that's why we have to give a very good personal example. And that's the hard part. The first section is the hardest section, is to individually perfect oneself. Because if you can't perfect yourself, what am I selling? If I'm a bad role model, how can I sell my religion? What kind of role model am I? It's very hard. So they're both at very high levels. The difference is the attitude to others. So let us contrast this with Abraham Avinu. Abraham Avinu truly cared about others. When Hashem told Abraham he's going to destroy the city of Sodom, you know, it was you and me would say, Baruch Hashem, destroy them quickly, they're evil. Instead of which, Abraham argues with him, Hashem. And he argues and he argues and he argues. So he tried to change society by spreading his belief in an invisible, all-powerful, infinite creator, ruler of the universe. And he made a lot of people. So unfortunately, when Abraham Avinu died, a lot of these people went back to what they were. His charisma was terrifically infecting. He could infect people by talking to them. And whoever came into his house would leave a changed person. Imagine, think about it. Whoever came to his house, he'd invite them in, make them talk. And make them say, Birkat HaMazon on their way out. Don't thank me. Thank God for everything you had. So that's Avraham Avinu, yes.
But we don't see that it lasted.
Right, it didn't last. It did not last. It did not last because Yitzhak didn't have the same charisma as his father. So, yes, it's very discouraging. That's why we need the Torah. Why do we need the Torah? How come Abraham Avinu didn't need a Torah? And the answer is some people are internally so good and so righteous, they can do it by themselves. On the other hand, most people are not like that. Most people need a guide. That's why Hashem gave us the Torah. Because otherwise, without the Torah, everything dies out. So you can have one generation which is terrifically spiritual, and the next generation is not spiritual. Yes?
Is Abraham called the first Jew? Like, how do you define his
life? Yeah, have a look at page 37. Page 37, top paragraph, I left it out. Among many misconceptions that people have about Judaism is Abraham was the first Jew. There were no Jews at the time.
But then, really became the Jews after they got the Torah.
Exactly. There's no Jews before that.
So
Jews did not begin at that time.
So it really began after first.
Right. And in other words, when Abraham comes back, will you count him in a minion? It's an interesting question.
No, because like kids talk about it and they say, was he the first Jew?
He wasn't Jewish.
He wasn't Jewish.
He was voluntarily a Jew. Which means he was doing mitzvot voluntarily as opposed to commanded. He wasn't commanded. He was commanded in Brit Milah. And he had the seven Noachai laws, that's it. Eight mitzvot.
So he wasn't really a Jew.
He wasn't Jewish.
He
was not Jewish. Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, all the way till Moshe Rabbeinu, till Har Sinai, no Jews. They were the forerunners of the Jews, which means they were Jews by choice without having any yoke.
But they knew the Torah?
Yes, they could.
By choice, Jews.
Well, he wasn't a Jew because he never had a mitzvah. He wasn't commanded to be a Jew. There were no commandments.
Servant.
They were observed voluntarily. Brit Milah, that's it.
So?
That's one mitzvah. That makes a person a Jew. I don't know. So he has one mitzvah. But he wasn't considered one of the chosen nation. He wasn't a chosen nation. Am Sugula was only at Har Sinai. So it's ironic. They have to go through convergence when they come back. Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, but Moshe Rabbeinu would do the conversion for them. Very quick. It's got to be very quick. Don't worry. Just go to mikveh, accept the mitzvah. Yes, goodbye. See you. That's it. Over. Because they are forefathers. They are role models. Adam Rishon wasn't Jewish. Adam, Noah. They wasn't Jewish. There were no Jews till Har Sinai. So are they higher than us or lower than us?
Rabbi, isn't that a little bit semantics? Like
what?
If somebody's born in a certain country, then the country country change names and becomes, then is he a native of that nationality or not?
Right. The question is, how do you become a Jew? So it's three things to become a Jew. Three things. Number one is Kabbalat HaMitzvot. So you can say that when we Kabbalat HaMitzvot. And number two is going to a mikvah. So I don't know if he went to the mikvah. And who was there to put him in the mikvah in the first place? So the third is a Brit Milah for a man.
For a but born Jews don't go to
mikvah. Huh?
Born Jews.
Yeah, because it has to be done at one stage. So it wasn't done. Avraham Avinu never had it done. Never had. There was no Beit Din. There was no mikvah. There were no commandments.
Oh, is that the one the Jews had to go to a mikvah before Har Sinai?
Yes.
Oh, so that's the one.
That was the mikvah. There was a mikvah Har Sinai. There was a stream that Moshe Rabbeinu created by hitting the rock. That rock, the water came out and gushed out. It became a stream by Har Sinai. There was a stream there. It all went to the stream. So that's where we learn the laws of conversion. We learn it from Har Sinai. We learn the laws of conversion from Har Sinai. So before Har Sinai, there were no Jews. But he was a Jew by choice, which means voluntarily accepted the mitzvot, which then exists there. So he was not doing mitzvot because he was commanded to mitzvot. He couldn't say a bracha shekel ishanu, except according to Tosfot. Tosfot says women can say a bracha shekel ishanu by mitzvot, positive commandments depend on time. Rambam says they can't. So if I'm not commanded, can I say a bracha? So Rashi says, even Lot was eating matzot at Pesach. Lot gave the angels matzot. So even Lot was accepted the mitzvot to a certain degree, but the mitzvot wasn't given yet. They knew about it, but they didn't. It's a very interesting concept. They knew about, they learned these things, they knew these concepts through prophecy, but they didn't have any mitzvot. They didn't have the obligation to do it. They were doing it voluntarily.
So what did Avraham teach people, all these masses of people that he...
Seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. That's enough. Seven mitzvot b'nei Noach is not just seven mitzvot. They, like Jewish law, you have books and books written on them. Because one of the mitzvot is a mitzvah of law. Having a system of law, and that system of law can be many books of system of law. You have to explain what is law, civil law. Civil law, that alone is a lot of things to learn. All the laws of robbery and stealing.
Very hard concept to accept.
What is?
That Abraham was not the first Jew.
He was a Jew conceptually, but wasn't a Jew physically.
What does that mean?
It means he was...
I mean, I was born Christian, but conceptually I'm Jewish.
Yes, conceptually Jewish, which means, what does that mean?
Because I got a Brit Milah.
No, it's more like saying, is George Washington American, or was he British? He was British, because he was born in Britain. There wasn't the United States of America yet. So who would not say George Washington was American?
America didn't exist yet, so right. Before America existed, he was a British.
He was certainly the first American, the father of our nation.
Okay. It's semantics, but the truth is that he was halachically. Is he a Jew halachically? No, he didn't go to mikvah.
Because I think of Avraham as, even though he wasn't there for Matan Torah,
it's like an honorary doctorate.
He knew all the mitzvot.
So he has an honorary Jew. He's an honorary Jew. Okay.
Whatever.
Don't worry. We'll have to figure this out when he comes. Can we count you in a minion, Avraham Avinu?
I should be as great as Avraham.
Halavai, we should all be. He's our role model. But the fact is, he didn't have to be a Jew, because he was greater than a Jew. You know what that means?
No. I think
we said there's certain things that are people who are spiritual geniuses. Anyway, we don't measure a person, are you a Jew or not a Jew? We measure a person, are you close to God or not? He was one of the closest people to Hashem. Without being a Jew, he could be close to Hashem. The question is, why do we need Judaism? And Judaism is a fallback. It's not the ideal. The ideal is, it's like the big debate. Do you need a Beit HaMikdash or not need a Beit HaMikdash? The ideal is no Beit HaMikdash. The ideal is we should know God without a place to focus our minds on. Mm-hmm. So same thing. Is Judaism an ideal or is Judaism a fallback? And we see Hashem didn't give Judaism right at the beginning. Hashem says, let's see what mankind can do without Judaism, without the Torah. If mankind can be spiritual without a Torah, I don't have to give a Torah. I don't have to give a code. Let's see what mankind can do. So Avraham Avinu could do it. But we see other generations couldn't. Hashem said, I got to give the Torah. I need a guide. Understand? So there's a higher level, which is no Torah. There's a higher level, which is the Torah should be so embedded in the person's good naturally. And that's what's going to happen when the Mashiach comes. That's what the prophet Jeremiah talks about, the new covenant in the flesh, which is that we'll know about God without even learning about God. It'll be so intrinsically inside us. And that was Avraham Avinu. So he's higher than Judaism as a fallback. It wasn't an ideal. And the proof is that Hashem didn't give it straight away. The Torah was not given to Adam. Why wasn't it given to Adam? And the answer is Hashem wants to see human beings. Let's see if they can get to this level without the Torah. And they couldn't. So Hashem said, I got to give them help. So how's that? I'll give them a code. It's like a person says, you know, I can be a genius without going to college. Okay, so maybe one person can, two people could. But without a system of learning, of education, most people can't do it. So Abraham Avinu was greater than a Jew. So was he a Jew? Was he not a Jew? No, he's greater than a Jew. You have to understand that. He's a super Jew. There's a level of super Jew, which is, without even Torah, he knew everything. Without even Torah, he had a relationship with God. But we need the Torah. Without the Torah, he can't get there.
Did he perform all the mitzvot?
Yeah, voluntarily. Whatever that means. There's Rav Nachman says an interesting thing. I don't normally quote Rav Nachman, but Rav Nachman says a very interesting thing on Yaakov was peeling these sticks to put before the sheep. Rav Nachman says, when Yaakov Avinu was peeling the sticks to in front of the sheep, he was doing the mitzvah of tefillin. What does that mean? So the answer is every mitzvah does something the world's above. So we do the mitzvah and things are happening in the world's above which we can't see. So sometimes you can do those things in the world's above without going through that mitzvah. So in a sense, you can do the mitzvah without doing the mitzvah. You can perform the action in the world above without doing that mitzvah if you know what you're doing. So they knew how to do these things, these tikkunim in the worlds above, without actually going through these physical details. That's what it means. Because they're doing the mitzvah without doing the mitzvah. And you can perform these things in the worlds above without doing the mitzvah. So today we don't have that ability, and therefore we have to go through the role of them doing the mitzvah. We can make these tikkunim in the worlds above. So in other words, we have a mission which we can't see. Most of our mission is hidden from us, which is fixing the worlds above, not just this world. When we fix this world, we're also fixing worlds above us, which we can't even see. But they could see it. They had this spiritual vision. They could see what they're doing. A clarity of vision that they could see what's necessary to do in the worlds above to fix what's going on in the worlds above as well. Okay, so a little bit of a philosophy, a bit of Kabbalah over here.
Listen, if we fix this world...
This world is the hardest thing to fix. Okay, so we have to be ethical individually. We have to be moral individually. We have to be upright members of the society. We have to be good role models for the rest of society. And eventually society will change through osmosis, either by interactions with others or by spreading the lessons of the Torah. So the Torah is being spread without us today. The Torah is out there. It's one of the biggest bestsellers in the world. Briefly eclipsed by the thoughts of Chairman Mao. But that's gone. Thoughts of Chairman Mao. No one does it anymore. It's amazing how in a generation it's gone. The Blue Book. Was it Blue Book? And then you had Gaddafi also. He had a book he had to learn. Everyone had to learn the book, his book. But those books are gone. The Torah is back to where it was. The big bestseller. The Torah is the bestseller. So we have to be role models to the whole world. Make the world a better place. It's ironic. It's ironic that the people who are the role models for the world are the most picked on. United Nations. Israel, the bad guys. So we're the bad guys. In the eyes of the nation, they have to make us bad because no one likes role models. No one likes a teacher's pet. Teacher's pet are the most. Had a kid in my class. Beginning of the year, he was the best kid in the class. End of the year, he was the worst kid in the class. So what happened to you? He said, everyone spoiled me. They call me names and they said, your teacher's pet. And da-da-da. So I had to act out. I couldn't take it anymore. So that's what happens. And that's why the focus on Israel. Israel is bad. Only Israel's the bad. Everyone else. Who's accusing Israel of being bad? Iran, China, all the human rights records, the worst human rights. They're accusing us. So we have to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Priests to who? And the answer is we have to be role models like our forefather Abraham. We have to be the priests of the world. We have to be Kohanim to the whole world. So the Jews have their priests, we have Kohanim, but we are the Kohanim of the world. We have to remember that. When people have ethical questions, they should come to ask. When I was teaching in Brooklyn, we had the Shomer, the guard. He was the security, head of security in the school. And he'd ask me questions, like he's looking for spiritual guidance. That was his. Very, very fine person, ex-army officer, whatever. not Jewish, but he would have questions. He'd know who to go to. He'd come to the rabbi and say, you know, Rabbi, what's, these are the questions I have. So that's our role model. That's our model. That's our role in the world. We have to be the priests of the nations. So today, thank God, we have a few rabbis that people do look up to. Rabbi Sacks, Jonathan Sacks in England, and non-Jews go to him and ask him for advice. The president, the prime minister of England would go to him for advice. Margaret Thatcher would go to Rabbi Jacobowitz for advice. Interesting, we have, that's our role. We're not very good at it. So most people have a general idea of how Jews originated. You read the Torah, how they got their land, how they established their kingdoms. However, most people don't realize the influence which the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, the prophets, have had on the world. If you go to a church, you're not allowed to go to church, but if you do go to church, you hear Tehillim, you hear Psalms. David HaMelech, they were David HaMelech. People don't know King David was a Jew. They don't know. I was taking driving lessons in England. He says, what's your name? David. He says, that's not a Jewish name. It's a Welsh name. So you don't know your history. Boy, they don't know. David, they don't know. David, King David. David, man. He was Jewish. King David was Jewish. He wrote Psalms. Yeah. But they're taking it from us. They're taking it from us. So people don't realize that. People don't realize the Bible they're reading is all about Jews. And when they do, they get a shock. You know, these are the Jews. So the Bible has influenced the mind and happiness of the Western world more than any battle ever fought. Think about it. The power of the pen. You don't win minds through fighting. You win the minds through the pen. Look at ISIL. They're very good at slick advertising. They get all these young people through Facebook and through all their advertising through media. They persuade them that this is the way to go. So you don't win battles. You don't win the minds of people through battles. You win the minds of people through what they read, what they see. Hollywood has influenced the mind of people, unfortunately, for bad. See how much good they could have done. Could have done tremendously good instead of all the garbage they put out. They could have influenced the mind of people.
So they corrupted Abraham's charm.
Yep, 100%. And look at all the directors. I mean, Jews over there. Unfortunately, it's terrible. So using their power to influence the world for good, unfortunately, they can corrupt people. It's corrupting. It's a corrupting influence. It's a disaster. So the Bible has influenced the mind and happiness of the Western world more than any battle ever fought, any invention ever made, any idea ever expressed. It inspired the religion, the language, the arts, the conduct, the fears, and the hopes. Almost every nation on earth over the last 60 or so years, one of the most consistently prominent issues on the world stage has been Israel and the Jews. And you've never heard of these nations. Madagascar. Who's ever heard of Madagascar? Anyone heard of Madagascar?
It's an island
of South Africa. And it has the same size as Israel. You don't hear about it. It has more people than Israel. You don't hear about it. There's an island off Vancouver called Vancouver Island. Ever heard of it? It's the size of Israel. Size of Israel. New Jersey, size of Israel. You don't see New Jersey in the news every day. New Jersey. Who talks about New Jersey? Christie may be in the news. But it's the size of Israel. It's amazing. And so all they talk about is Israel, Israel, Israel. Jews are news. God's plan is to keep us at center stage. There's a story, I don't think I quoted the story, it's a great story. It's a Chinese person moved here to America to learn English and go to college over here. And somebody made a friend with a rabbi. So he said, the rabbi, can you help me to learn English? He said, okay, so go read the New York Times every day and tell me all the words you don't understand. So every day they would go through all the words he didn't understand and the guy would explain to him the words. And one day he says, listen, he says, rabbi, he said, I don't understand. I see China on the front page, see Russia on the front page, see the US on the front page, I see this country, Israel, I've never heard of it. Where is Israel? So the rabbi says, here, look at the map. So they open the map, and see the Mediterranean, he says, where's Israel? He says, see, it says over here, Israel in the sea, it says over there, Israel. He says, yeah, where's the country? He says, that little sliver over there, Israel, but it's, what's so special about Israel? He says, well, they have a kotel, they have a wall. So, wall? We also have a wall. How big is your wall? Well, our wall is 400 feet. He says, so what's so special about Israel? So he takes him to the map. He says, where should Israel be? So, well, it's in the front page of the New York Times every day. It must be a big country. He points to Canada. That's what Israel should be. To be mentioned in the front page every day, you have to be a big country. Well, it's a tiny little country. Hashem keeps us on center stage. Hashem wants the Jews to be on center stage. So people always think about Jews, think about Torah, think about what is God's people, think about God. And that's why people hate Jews. Because why do the Nazis hate Jews? He tells you, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, knew it, understood it. He tells you, Mein Kampf, I hate the Jews because they spread immorality in the world. They spread this idea that the power of might is not the power to follow. And I want to follow the power of might. Might should rule. The rule of the jungle. He wanted the rule of the jungle. He says, if you leave a single Jewish child alive, he's going to reinvent the whole system. You have to kill the last child, last Jewish child. But his idea was right, in a sense that Jews keep the world moral, keep the world ethical. We spread morality in the world. So Judaism is not a major religion because of its numbers. Because of the impact. And that's why it's called a great world religion. It's interesting. Look at the encyclopedia, great world religions. It's ironic to see Jews over there. All these massive religions. You know, you got Islam, you got Christianity, you got Hinduism, you got Buddhism. In the millions and billions, and here we are, one of the great world religions. So it's not the impact of our numbers, it's the impact of the ideas. So the real test lies in a people's effort to improve the mind, the character, and well-being of humanity. To give life new directions. To extend justice in human society. That's why the small Jewish people are of such interest and importance in the world. And the United Nations, ironically, on the, you know, on the Isaiah wall, if you go to New York, the United Nations, they couldn't find any other prophet of any other nation, any other religion in the world to put on their wall except Isaiah. Think about it. The message of Judaism is the message that everyone recognizes as being the ultimate message. Chapter 2, verse 2, page 39, will happen at the end of days. The mountain of the temple of Hashem will firmly establish as the head of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all the nations will stream to it. Many people will go and say, let us go up to the mountain of Hashem, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. Kibbutz Yon Tete Torah, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. From Zion will the Torah come forth, and the word of Hashem from Jerusalem. He will judge among the nations and will settle the arguments of many people. They shall beat their swords into plows and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift sword against nation. They will no longer study warfare. That's the prediction for the end of the days. That's on the Isaiah wall. So imagine, there's no other religion that gave a message of world peace as our prophets. Imagine, this is Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu lived before the end of the temple, the first temple period. And he's seeing the destruction of the first temple in his eyes. Never happened yet. But here he's predicting the future. Really far future, thousands of years later. And again in chapter 11 he predicts this staff will emerge from the stump of Yishai. This is the Mashiach. A shoot will sprout from his roots. The spirit of Hashem will sprout from his roots. The spirit of Hashem will rest upon him. A spirit of wisdom and understanding. A spirit of knowledge and fear of Hashem. He will be imbued with the spirit of fear for Hashem. Will not need to judge by what his eyes see, nor decide by what his ears hear. In other words, internally he doesn't have to see anything. He knows exactly what's going on without seeing, without hearing. He will judge the destitute with righteousness and decide with fairness for the humble of the earth. He will strike the wicked of the world with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be the girdle around his loins. The wolf will live with the sheep, and the leopard will lie down with a kid. And a calf, a lion's whelp, will walk together. Will neither injure nor destroy in all my sacred mountain. For the earth will be full of knowledge of God as water covers the seabed. So that's a prediction for the final days, is that everyone will know God. And everyone will go and want to learn about God. Everyone's going to go to Jerusalem. So we build the third temple, everyone's going to be there. It's not just going to be a Jewish place. All the nations of the world will go to find Hashem. So this is interesting, because this is really the Jewish vision. The Jewish vision is world peace. The Jewish vision is world perfection. This is Tikkun Olam Malchut Shaddai. That's what we're talking about. And this will happen. We're getting there. We're getting slowly. We're getting there. Many bumps in the road, but we're getting to this end game. The end game is right before us. Yes?
Will the other religions change and people...
Listen, once you have this revelation, you have no choice. You have no choice. You have to recognize only one God. Everyone's going to recognize it. That's why everyone's going to go and find out more. So everyone says it. The Christians say Mashiach is coming. The Muslims say that Mashiach is coming. But they're going to be shocked and say, oh, it's a Jewish Mashiach. And that's our king. And everyone's going to say, everyone's going to come. That's the prediction. So Judaism is broad and universal.
They'll hate us even more.
Pardon?
They'll hate us even more.
No, on the contrary. They'll come and they'll catch you by your sleeves and say, teach me, teach me. I want to know. And if we don't know, I don't know myself. They're going to come and catch us. Say, teach me, I want to know more about your religion. Because I see it's coming. I see this is happening. Everyone, we'll all have to do tshuva, believe me. We have to do tshuva every day. Because no one's perfect. Nobody's perfect. No human being is perfect. And that's why Hashem made tshuva. We all have to do tshuva. The trick is to do tshuva before this happens. Because once it happens, the tshuva not worth much. Why? Because it's everyone has to do tshuva. The trick is to be there before it happens, to be ready for this before it happens. Because once it happens, it's going to be cheap. The effort is going to be effortless. There's no effort. We're rewarded according to our effort. Right now, we have free choice. And the rewards are tremendous. Every second you're here, you gain tremendous reward. Tremendous reward. Every time a person learns to write, you gain tremendous reward. Why? Because the Yetzirah is so great. Trying to pull us out, trying to push us out. So whenever there's a Yetzirah, there's tremendous reward. When the Mashiach comes, that's it. No reward. Hardly any reward. Why? Yetzirah's dead. No more Yetzirah. People will be different. People say, you know, I just want to do mitzvot all day. That's all I want to do. I have no other desire. I want to wake up, I want to do mitzvot. That's it. That's it. And that's, it's going to be universal peace. And all the money, can you imagine, all the money we're spending on warfare. Billions and billions of dollars of warfare are going to be invested in bettering society. Imagine, all that money goes to bettering society. I don't know how many trillions are spent on weapons. It's amazing. Even in Israel, we have to spend so much money, 2%, 3% of GDP on garbage, on weapons. Imagine, we don't have to spend that money. We can spend the money on research, medical research, and health, and providing for everyone. There'll be tons of money available. And that's the prediction. The wolf will live with the sheep. Who is that? And Rambam says, don't take it literally. The wolf's not going to change. The people are going to change. The people who are in the shape of wolves, the wolves, will live with the sheep. There'll be peace on earth. So this is a very broad, universal kind of idea. That's why the Torah says, the Torah is given in the wilderness. It was given to everyone. All people, all races. Anyone can come and take Torah. It's open to everyone. No society can say it's mine. It was given in my territory. The Torah is mine. It was given in the desert. It's available to everyone. However, when we live, with regards to where we live, the Torah says we have to live in Israel. So it's interesting. Torah is given in the desert. Torah can be given anywhere. But where we live, we have to be living in Israel. Why do we have to live in Israel? So this is a very interesting idea. I saw this idea from Rabbi Sassoon. I don't know if I mentioned him. Is there are two things. I'm going to stop in a few minutes. Let's just finish with this idea. The idea of a monopoly. Everyone knows what a monopoly is? A monopoly is someone who has cornered the market. Right? One store and that's it. Has everything over there. Now there's two kinds of monopolies. There's what's called a horizontal monopoly. Horizontal monopoly is, say, shoe stores. There's one brand that has all the shoe stores. Horizontal monopoly. And then there's another kind of monopoly which is called a vertical monopoly. Vertical monopoly is this, not just that he owns the shoe stores. He owns the production of the shoes going back all the way to the raw material. That's vertical. So there's vertical monopoly and he owns the supply chain, right? Even a whole supply chain. And that's a monopoly going back all the way to the supply of whatever it is. So there's a vertical monopoly and a horizontal monopoly. So now Judaism is very interesting. We don't want a monopoly on a horizontal. We don't want a horizontal monopoly. We want everyone to exist. Everyone can be believe in God. We don't want a monopoly on belief in God. We don't want everyone to be Jewish. We don't care if everyone's Jewish or not. You know? As long as you're a righteous person, you keep the seven Noahide laws, you go your way. We don't want a monopoly on religion. Right? Whereas other religions want a monopoly on religion. Islam wants everyone to be Muslim. They want a horizontal monopoly. But Judaism, we want a vertical monopoly. What does it mean, vertical monopoly? Is we want to be Jewish and apply Jewish law to every facet of human existence. Which means you need a country to be able to do that. All the laws follow Judaism. That's a vertical monopoly. That's what we're trying to build, is a country, a place in the world where it will be a role model for all the nations of the world. And we haven't got there yet. We have to perfect Israel, that Israel's society where there's no murder. It's amazing how many murders go on. It's too much. It's terrible. There was a murder just yesterday in Israel. Why are there murders in Israel, in a Jewish country? There should be no murders. There should be no robbery. We should try and build a perfect society in Israel. And that's, we have this opportunity now, and that's what we have to try and do. Make Israel a perfect country, and it will be a role model for all the countries. Just like Jews should be a role model for people, so too Israel should be a role model for the other countries. And that's our opportunity. That's what we have to strive to do. And that's why Hashem says we have to live in a certain place. Because when you live in a certain place, you can build your own society built on real values and build a perfect society. Okay, we'll stop here. And we'll continue next week. Yeah, it's gone up already. You better buy your real estate now. It's going up in Israel, boys. Yeah, it's going up.